Well, hello again, and welcome to the AFTN Soccer Show, broadcasting at UBC from the unceded Musqueam Territory. If you're listening to this on the podcast, this will be episode 185. I'm Michael McCall.
I'm Steve Pender.
And I'm Zachary Adam Eisenhower.
And it's been a fun weekend. I've seen three live football matches. WFC 2-1 on Saturday, Division 3 VMSL playoff battle on Saturday night that had three players sent off, four goals, two players carried off. Division 2 championship clinching game in VMSL this afternoon. Burnaby Metro Selects winning that. And yeah, it was a great footballing weekend. Unfortunately, the only thing to really spoil it was the Whitecaps MLS side. And unfortunately, we are a Whitecaps podcast, so we kind of have to talk about that. So we're gonna be a little bit tighter this week, because last week's was a little bit loose. We went a bit too far, or a bit too long. So we're going to start by talking, I guess, about the two games that's taken place in the last week. We're going to kick things off with some chat about Tigres.
We'll go in chronological order.
Yeah. Just some quick thoughts about that. Kind of weird, because when the draw was made and after the first leg, you basically didn't really give the Whitecaps too much of a hope. But now that we're out of the competition, kind of feel a little bit disappointed, really, that at how it ended, because you just feel there was a little bit more than could have been done and we could have got through that tie.
Especially when you consider the way the goals were allowed and the chances we had, because there were a number of chances we had on both, actually both games. There was opportunities to score on the road, and especially after the break, that chance that I think Bola had, and that was a great stop by them. It's just a little bit here and there. Like, for the amount that people are talking about, Tigres was so phenomenal. I think the Whitecaps had a chance in those two games.
Football is a sport of fine lines.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, not getting anything in the away match, whether that be a clean sheet and or away goals, was massive. I agree with you, though, Michael. Going into the game, there was hope, I think is the best word to call it. There was like this glimmer of hope. There was like this, okay, sure we're down, but I think there's a chance that somehow we might be able to pull this off. Now,
obviously, it increased after the first 3 minutes.
And too, totally, so yeah. When Shea scored, it was like, wow, and there was real hope. And then the first half, I think, played out, and we didn't create many more super quality chances. But again, when that second half kicked off, you were like, you wanted to start to believe again. Like, one more goal, we're equal on aggregate, and yeah, there was those moments of hope. But ultimately, I think, you know, a side with the more quality ended up, you know, showing that and getting a 4-1 aggregate win that I think is respectable. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot of positives to take from it.
It essentially took a world-class strike in order to put the Whitecaps away by Jiniak. And that was a phenomenal goal too.
I mean, it started so good. I mean, everyone had talked about you wanted to get that early goal to get yourself back in the tie. 3 minutes in, you get that goal. And you're thinking, wow, this really, really could happen. And it seemed to be at the start of the second half, when Bolaños did have that chance, that seemed to be the thing that gave Tigres the kick up the ass. It was the thing that basically they were like, crap, this team could actually get back in this. We kind of need to step up a gear. And then the next 15 minutes, they just dominated. And then once Gignac got that goal, It was all over. There was never going to be any way back. Even if the Caps had scored the next goal, they weren't going to get back into it. And Tigres basically could manage the game just the way they want. But the question to ask both you guys is, obviously, Brick Shea got his first goal as a Whitecap 3 minutes in. 2 minutes later, he's down injured. Then he's off the pitch. Do you think it would have made any difference if he hadn't got injured? Would he have been somebody that could have been a difference maker, or was the writing always on the wall?
It would have been interesting to see if he could have contributed more. I think Breck Shea, I think, showed some of his swagger to start that game. Not just the goal, and I think it was a really it wasn't like an amazing finish, but I think it was a quality finish for just the he showed his maturity, he showed his quality, and just the way he waited and paused to finish it and to make sure it was gonna find the back of the net. But also his celebration. Did you see his celebration?
Yeah,
he did like the he did like a
like what the Icelandic team had done. They did that kind of
was the
it was
fish.
The fish.
It was the fish.
I think it was the fish.
I haven't looked at it like many times, but my interpretation was he was doing a dive, mimicking his dive in the first leg.
Oh, and that could be
he stopped and kind of fell. And to me,
that would have been good. I just thought he was a keen fish. Well, he is a keen fisherman, so I thought he was doing the fish thing.
No, the fish thing, you need like the whole team on board. You can't just do that by yourself. Like, you got to get guys around. The guys can't crowd you like they did on that. So I might be totally wrong, but that was my interpretation of what he was doing.
There was a funny tweet going around, though, that folk had got that as a gif, and it was like, amazingly, this isn't how he injured himself.
I think it would have been interesting to see what happened, because I really felt like coming off the red card, getting the early goal, it felt like, okay, he maybe has something to prove, or he wants to show his worth or whatever. And it was like exciting.
And I mean, we'll talk more about just the whole Whitecaps injuries in the second part. But it was a tough one. Alphonso Davies wasn't going to start that game, didn't start that game, because that was the game you needed the experienced guys. And then if you were still in it by the hour mark or whatever, you bring someone like Alphonso on that can run at them. He looked tired out there. And Robbo admitted afterwards he was tired. And it's like, the danger is, our creativity is nil. Davies is the only guy that's been giving us anything. We're going to run him into the ground if we don't watch.
I disagree with that. I think Davies has been amazing and offers a lot. I think the creativity, and we saw it in the LA game, and we saw it in parts in the Tigres match, comes from Bola, comes from a guy who wants the ball played to feet, who can create. He's not crazy fast, but he's tricky. He knows when to change the pace. Like, you even saw on his chance that he got saved in, he started the play on like virtually the left touch line, and he finished it with a shot at the right post. I think I don't know. We'll talk about this maybe a little bit. I don't know where he's at. But to me, he's
things to talk about. Bola in the second part.
Yeah. So he's the fulcrum of the attack right now, with no Reyna and no one else.
Which is then kind of worrying, because he didn't travel down to the game on Saturday
because
he's got a knee injury. But we'll come to the injuries in the second half.
So I agree with you, though, that Davies coming on did remove this second half weapon. Like that losing Shea who looked like he was in form, and then not having Davies as a second half option began to take away the hope.
And I think, I don't know if you guys mentioned, because I was doing something else, but like Breck Shea, when he got off, it might have affected the players too, because they're going in with a solid plan.
Yeah.
And when they're going with a solid plan, something changes, it kind of throws everything off, and maybe that affected them a little bit in that second half.
Is Steve allowed to promote his online business? Well, no. Well,
no, I'm running the boards here. As you tweeted out that picture like last week, I got to do some other stuff behind here.
It is really hard to do the boards and talk, right, as I find out. So 4-1, the longest cup run in Whitecaps history is over. The 2 years is gone. If you look back, just really at the Champions League aspect of it, what's your overriding thoughts on just this second foray into the Champions League? First time we've made the knockout stages, got to the semis. Looking back on it, what do you take from it?
Well, I think the comparison between just the Champions League campaigns, the two that we've had, is honestly, it felt like the first one, we did not take it serious enough. And I think that was seen in the lineups that were put out. I think it was Seattle at home first in the first one.
It was.
And we needed to have the strongest lineup in that game possible. And then if you lose that, okay, then you can change things up, because it's probably over, because you've lost to Seattle. You've lost at home. So I felt like the difference between the two is that we took the second one more seriously. And that doesn't mean we, our top players are playing every minute, but we took it more seriously.
There was enough of a sprinkle of our best players in there to go with the younger guys. It wasn't just all second year.
To get all 12 points,
we
top the group.
9, 10, 11 no. changes.
Yeah. We topped the group. We had a goal difference that put us at the number one seed.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest achievement. To be the number one seed in this tournament.
Tigres had to upset us to make the final, but to me, it's like the other thing when I think about this go around. And I know some people have been talking about, like, this is somehow a negative, or this somehow is a hindrance to people engaging in the competition as a whole. But for me, one of the beautiful things is I look back and this was 23 months, I know for some people that it's hard to grasp or understand for some reason or whatever. But to learn a different sporting culture, the sporting culture that is football. But to me, that was a beautiful thing. Like Matt from Calgary, a guy, a Whitecap supporter in Calgary who comes out for games and goes to games. We have Edmonton was tweeting after the game, like, oh, I was there at the beginning of it all, right? And it was just like, go back and look at.
Twice he was out there at the beginning.
Yeah, no, I don't think he came up with the first. I'm not sure he came up the first time. But no, there was the snow game. There was the one-all game here. Then the game in Edmonton when Matias Laba got the extra time winner. It was, and that kicked it all off. And then, so it's like. It's not just one. It's not just the two games against Tigres. It's not just the knockout round. It's not just the group stage and the knockout round. It's like this big journey that we've been on, which included lifting a trophy. So it's our first Voyageurs Cup. So for me, it was incredibly special, incredibly meaningful, and I'll always have fond memories of it.
Yeah, I mean, I asked Robbo after the game on Wednesday, like, what his thoughts were of the last 2 years, and he said he couldn't even remember last week. So we didn't really get much of an answer on that, but. The last thing just to mention in this part about the Tigres game and the whole Champions League is we've had that experience now. And we'll talk about attendance and fans and stuff in the second part, but we've had this experience. What does that do now going forward? We want to have that again. We want to make sure that we win the Voyageurs Cup this year so we can be in the playoff with TFC. Is it something that you think everyone at the club is wanting to have again, or is it still kind of going to be seen as a bit of a nuisance to the MLS campaign?
I think, you know, half a dozen of one, six of another. You know, like, I think for some people, yeah, it's going to be a priority. Some people, it's going to be an important thing. I think for other people, it will be something that does take away from what is the easiest thing to communicate, the easiest thing to market, the easiest thing to get people excited about. That doesn't matter. To me, it needs to be a priority for the people who are most important, which is our technical staff, which is our coaching staff. As long as they go about things in a similar way that they did with this last group stage campaign, if they do that with the Voyageurs Cup this year, with an intent to go out and beat Montreal and beat the winner of Toronto, Edmonton, Ottawa, that'll show how... That is ultimately we'll know how serious the important people are taking it.
Yeah, and I agree. I think they need to go after this. It gives them not only a chance to get more games for the younger players to weed them in. It also if you the more you advance in this, the more you that allocation money they get, and they can use that to get better players and pay stuff down. So it does give them a little bit more in that.
Totally. Do we know? So this is, I've just read cursorily. I haven't read fully, but the $200,000 for making the semifinals, is that something just our club gets? Does it have to go through MLS?
As far as I know, the club get it, and that's from CONCACAF. So
yeah.
It's not.
Right.
They get their MLS payment on top of that and everything as well.
Awesome.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's it.
Yeah.
And then the final
thing. You need to spend it wisely as well. We'll come to in the second part.
And to finish that off, the one thing I'd like to see them do is, and we'll get to that a little bit later, obviously, but they need to, I don't know if you want to say market it better, but they need to. Just a tweak a few things that are off the pitch, and we'll get to that afterwards.
That's going to be in the second.
We'll get the second half. Yeah.
So just the last thing to mention about this: couple of tweets I want to read out here from Chris Corrigan, our writer at AFTN at SalishC86 on Twitter. He says the Champions League run started the whole GTFC hashtag, which in our version of it is "Get the Effing Cup." and it also stands for Grimsby Town Football Club. And that was a hashtag that brought a relationship between Southsiders and Grimsby Town supporters. And for Chris, it's been a fun 2 years. But he also adds as well that the Champions League, it's all about the meaning that you bring to it yourself as a supporter. If you're not interested in it, fine. If it means a lot to you like it does to us, great. It's not going anywhere.
Just think, if they just checked that hashtag before, they could have avoided that connection to Grizzlies. That's I say that jokingly, because I know that's been meaningful. Guys have gone. I think it was Steve. Steve Kavanaugh. I think went over for like their.
There's been stuff in the program.
Yeah, a cup match or whatever.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah,
but of course that was the first of the games this week, and Saturday, Whitecaps headed down to Utah, and it's been a winter of snow
for us. Yeah,
yes, snowpocalypse, snowmageddon. Vancouver's had more snow than I can remember in the last 10 years of me living here. So we finally got rid of that. So just as soon as we get rid of it in Vancouver, Vancouver head down to the snow in Salt Lake. And it was a farcical game. But before we even get into it, just something I want to ask both you guys. Now, I'm from the UK. We have snow. I've been at games where it snowed and the game's been abandoned. I've been at games where it snowed just before kickoff and the game hasn't even started. I was at one horrendous game which should never have finished, but the snow basically came on in the last 15 minutes and they just kept that going. Now, we've seen before in MLS, they don't like postponing games, they don't like abandoning games, partly because of the travel, the cost, everything like that, primarily money and TV. They played that Minnesota game earlier this season that should never have gone ahead. So the fact that they did that, I knew they were never going to abandon this game. But do you think the game should have finished? Should that game on Saturday against Salt Lake have been abandoned? For me, yes.
Yeah, well, I was watching my a few guys came over after the WFC 2 game. Half a dozen was watching my living room, and Adrian was like, yeah, there's no way this game is going to go the distance because it's too much. And that was when I was like, dude, there's hardly any snow. I was like, they're not playing Edmonton FC.
Yeah.
It's going to be fine. But I wouldn't have been surprised. I mean, as the game went on, other guys in the room were like, oh, yeah, I hope they call it now. And I was like, well, they're past the time where if they call it now, we're going to get a loss. So might as well keep playing.
Yeah, no, and I was watching it with family members who don't watch too much MLS, and they were going, why aren't they calling it?
Yeah, my wife was the same. She was like, what?
It's dangerous. And I joked around with them. I was like, because they're parents of soccer, like, the kids and everything. I go, I guess their parents didn't complain long enough or hard enough to get this canceled. I think this is a little bit of revenge on RSL's part, because it was RSL who was going to visit the Whitecaps in 2011 when they had that fake grass or the grass put on top of Turf and Empire, and it got called off. So this is a little bit of revenge.
Game.
And I think also, just to make another point, you were talking about the Whitecaps. I'm almost sure that the Whitecaps were never in town when it actually snowed here. I think they were in Wales the whole time, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I think they were.
I think they were down in Portland.
Yeah, so I don't think they were here during the whole snowstorm.
One thing about that day, that the Man City RSL grassing was. We went to the stadium hours and hours before the game, and you know it got called off. So Massimo, Devin Rowcliffe, and myself jumped in Massimo's car and drove to the PDL game against Kitsap Pumas. It was just great to go to see a game in Kitsap, even though we lost 3-0 or whatever. But we made a good day of
it. They were a powerhouse team.
They were.
So let's look at the debacle that was the RSL game. First thing we have to look at, I guess, the big surprise that Kyle Robinson sprang. And it seemed to surprise everyone, because I was listening to the pregame show on the radio coming back from the WFC 2 game, and it caught all the radio guys out. 3-5-2 formation, 3 centre-backs, 3 defensive midfielders. You'd think with that we could actually defend, but that's something else that we'll come to. It didn't work. I've been calling for a 3-5-2 for ages. I've had several chats with Rob over the last couple of years where I've been saying, why didn't you go 3-5-2? Why didn't you try that? And what he's always said to me is that he'll play 3-5-2 if he feels he has the right personnel to do it. And for that, he wants really fast wing-backs. So someone like Sam Adekugbe was like made for that. Jake Nowinski kind of seems like he could be made for that as well. And he feels that he'd have to have 3 solid centre-backs to do that. they need to do a bit of practice. He said, I could never play it without trying it in training.
Or they say preseason.
Your preseason, everything like that. Then, out of the blue, you're playing a 3-5-2. I've never, that I can remember, see them practicing that at training. Now, I'm not at every training session. But the amount of training sessions I've been at over the last couple of weeks, I have never seen a 3-5-2.
Even if you weren't there, somebody would have seen it. Somebody would have talked
about
it.
Oh, yeah, somebody would have said, oh, they're trying a 3-5-2 today.
And the fact that you're saying that the radio people or the TV people...
God, the radio folk were completely surprised by it.
They usually do interviews with the coaches before they go on these trips to find out what, you know, talk about, have topics to talk about and everything. And if that's not mentioned, then, you know, they're surprised.
Robbo said afterwards that basically they didn't have a lot of time to work on it. Why would you do that then? It's like...
Especially in the RSL.
Yeah,
like,
he's going to say it was because of the personnel he had available. And that's nonsense, because the team which I thought was going to go out was a set 4-2-3-1. And the personnel was there to do it. Whether you had Jordan Harvey or De Jong as the left back, Nowinski was always going to be the right back, and then two of the centre backs. There was no need to risk a 3-5-2.
Okay. I hear you saying that you're concerned about that this did not work. I think it's harsh to say that something can't work for us after one match, especially one match in what we've already just said was really poor conditions. And now I know that it wasn't a great, amazing first half, but I think everything that happened in the second half, and I think both goals, when you look at the first two goals, they were almost mirror images of different of our central defenders getting beat on cutbacks in snow.
Yeah, which Robbo did say afterwards that those conditions for big centre backs was not. They were too big to try and turn in those conditions.
Right. So, and then the third goal was our keeper came for a ball which he didn't get, and who knows if the snow played any caused him any issue in getting as high as he wanted to for that cross on that corner, right?
And I accept all those things. And then I'll turn that around and say to you, second half, we lost those goals in those conditions. You can't blame the 3-5-2 for that. Although you can blame the fact that we only had two players at the back for the first goal. But then you have to look at the first half, where we could have been 5-0 down at half time. Plata could have had a hat trick in the first 20 minutes.
Sissian
had two great chances.
I think Plata was thrown off by his new hairstyle and those lines on the side of his head.
And also throwing snowballs at Tim Parker. Which, there was a question posed on that. Do we think that Disco will review that and give a suspension to Plata for throwing a snowball at Tim Parker?
Was that Plata or somebody?
That was Plata.
Or was it? I don't think so. It was kind of a half toss. I don't think it was that much of a...
He was more accurate throwing the snowball, though, than he was in front of goal. Which was thankful for the Whitecaps, because the Whitecaps were dreadful in that first half. And you can't blame the conditions.
Yeah, they
were ripped apart.
Okay,
that's with three center backs and three holding midfielders.
Yeah,
okay. And again, that's the first time playing a formation in a game, however much they have or haven't trained in it. To me, it's not something I would throw out and say, oh my goodness, they can never do that again.
No, I'm not saying that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm saying we need better personnel if we're going to do that. And the personnel we currently have showed last night that basically they can't do that.
I think the three center backs on a normal day, I think I would try that with him again. I think Marcel, the further up the pitch Marcel is the better off he is. And you're right, that formation is made for someone like a Sam. And I think Jordan is somewhere between Sam and Marcel in terms of those things.
Yeah, he would have struggled last night as well. He's not having a good season to begin with.
Yeah, and so I think Jake could flourish.
I thought Nowinski was probably our best player last night. I thought he had a great game. There did seem confusion on a number of occasions, though, with Nowinski and De Jong, and especially with Christian Dean.
Christian Dean, I thought, struggled.
Yeah.
I thought he had a difficult... Out of all the players, he had the most difficult time.
The shape in the first half, somebody sent me a message going, are you sure they're playing three at the back? I'm like, it's a 3-5-2.
Yeah.
Because you looked at that shape, and Sometimes there was four, sometimes there was five, sometimes there was three. And it felt like De Jong and Nowinski just didn't know when they were meant to be back, when they were meant to be going forward. Christian Dean had a nightmare. It's the worst game I've seen him play at any level for the Whitecaps. No, and I love Christian. I'm rooting for him. I thought he had a great first game. But that he had a nightmare.
Like
Saturday.
Sometimes I thought, honestly, not knowing, I was watching it with a bunch of family. We weren't really paying attention too much in the first half. I had to go back to watch that. I thought, I had no idea we were playing a three man at the back. I wasn't sure if Christian Dean was playing left back. Sometimes I saw him as a center back. And sometimes I saw him as holding midfielder. He was like up the field while the center backs were way back here. So I was very confused at what Christian Dean was doing. I had no idea Tim Parker was even on the field sometimes. Oh, that was a little bit to do with the snow.
I want to read some tweets from Mark Rogers. Ex-professional player, knows the centre-back position inside and out. I love his analysis after games, especially when he's like breaking down the freeze frames on the TV. And the first one, he broke down the freeze frame for that goal where there was basically two guys back and said, if you can't manage the gaps, you can't play a back three. It's terrible and the Titanic could float through the hole. It was that big.
That was the part where it didn't even look like a back three. There should be no gaps on a back three.
At that point.
Yeah, there should be no gaps at all on a back three.
But then he followed up by saying either Waston doesn't have a clue how to play on the right side of a back three, or Nowinski doesn't know that they switched to a back four for the second goal, because Dean went off and they were meant to have gone to a back four, but Nowinski was still piling forward and you were left with a back three that just simply wasn't working. And I totally agree with this last one, which is, don't tell me it's because of the snow. I'm not hearing it. They got exposed twice before the goal on cross-field passes.
That's all fair. That's all fair criticism. I think, though, there are some people who were calling this before Tigres' game. This is a throwaway game.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that's how I feel about it.
When you're playing a winless team that's at the bottom of the conference, you expect to get points from that. Yes, they've got a new coach. Yes, they're really motivated because they haven't got a win. You can see both sides of it. But this, when you look at the schedule that's coming up, and we'll come at that in the second part, but when you look at that schedule that's coming up, this was the most winnable game in the next 6 weeks. And that's the terrifying part of it. Because we could have lost that game 5-6-0, and it could have been our biggest ever loss in MLS.
Yeah, and I think we were mentioning before we got on the air, there easily could have been three goals at the halftime before the snow even hit.
Could have been four or five because Movsisian had that one from six yards out. And then before that, Usted fumbled the shot from him that could have gone anywhere.
No. We talked about the defense, but going forward, there was nothing going on either.
No.
Montero barely got any service.
I saw a good tweet today about that, how he's not getting service, but he's not bitching about it. He's not like throwing hissy fits on the pitch like other strikers that we've seen on our team as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's creating more than he's getting service.
To.
Yeah, he's having to. But the thing is, then he gets no support from the other players going forward. So it's a difficult thing right now for him. There doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page in attack.
Your new best friend, Gideon Hill, Gideon Hill 12 on Twitter asked about our striker on Saturday. He says he's an exceptional player. But by strengthening what position, attacking mid or big striker, does he better succeed? So what do we need to bring in?
I mean, he's always looked better to me as a second striker. But when we spoke to him before the season started, when he first came here, he said he's totally comfortable playing the lone striker, the number nine, and that's what he did over in Portugal.
I don't think just yesterday. I think there's been a number of times, like number of spells so far this year where I think he's looked lost, like on an island with minimal service, with no service, whatever. That's obviously an issue, but like he just hasn't found a way to get into games.
No, I mean, the only sniff he really had yesterday was the ball that De Jong sent in the first half, but he had three players around him and he just couldn't make room to try and get in the end of it.
The best he's looked is when he's had the person he's had most chemistry with, I thought, is Bola. when they're both on the pitch together, and especially in that second half LA game, that's when it looked the best. So
against New York, him and Davies linked up well, though, yeah, as well. They, I mean, I was so excited because it's like the two of them just seemed right on the same page right away.
So they need to get some combination of that going forward in on a regular basis.
The other problem, Corrigan says we need an attacking midfielder.
Well, we're going to discuss
Reyna. We got Reyna coming back. Yeah.
We're going to look at what we need to bring in the second part. But Nicolas Mosquera also got the start.
Yeah.
As a striker, I guess, if we're looking at the formation that they played. And again, for me, you could have gone easily with a 4-2-3-1 with Mosquera as the 10 or on the left wing if you're playing De Jong at left back. And then it gives a chance for Bustos to get a game. Kyle Gregg up front with possibly Montero as the 10 even. It's like you had so many options that you didn't have to do that 3-5-2 in that game. But Mosquera... And I've said this before, I just don't really see what he offers the team when he's a starter. He's just not starting material to me. Every time he starts, I feel he struggles. Yes, he was invisible. I know other players were invisible as well, but he's the guy that's meant to be there to create stuff and not be invisible.
They were especially invisible with those white kits in that snow.
Yeah,
in the second half.
Had they not put those triangles on, it would have been perfect camouflage.
That's what I was thinking too. The blue triangles.
Do you know? I haven't actually been that up close to the strip because every time we've done the post game interviews or the scrums dressed, at training, they're wearing tracksuit tops or whatever.
I think you're worried
yesterday
about
nausea. At the WFC2 game. I was chatting to the guys after the game and I was like right face to face with it. It's even more hideous than I thought it was up close. It just, oh. Anyway.
It's very poor.
Don't start me on that. So I think that's all we'll talk about for this first part. We're going to come back after some messages talking about what the team needs to do now, where it needs to go. And I want to have a little quick chat about some attendances and things like that as well. So if you want to get anything asked or talk about anything that we're talking about, send us a tweet at AFTN Canada or at Zachary AM. But now, here's some messages.
Quarter Magazine and Mint Records present Hot Dog Days. It's a monthly concert and video series at What's Up Hot Dog featuring local acts, good food, pinball, and high fives. Admission is free and there will be hot dogs. The first edition is Tuesday, April 11th, featuring Be Afraid and the Shit Talkers. Hot dog. Hot dog. 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 Hot dog.
A stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle, a tax-deductible receipt, and a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
Open Media International is a non-profit, non-partisan organization working towards informed, citizen-driven internet policy. Open Media believes in keeping the internet uncensored, open, innovative, secure, and providing universal access to fast and affordable networks. If you would like Open Media to keep campaigning for citizens and internet policy, you can donate to them at openmedia.org or openmedia.ca. You can also find them on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+.
Welcome back to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia on the unceded Musqueam Territory. So, Steve's knob pushing there maybe wasn't the best, but we're back. But he'll get to push some more knobs in a little while. That's just why he comes. It's his main thing that he's enjoying. So, second part of the show. Not going to be a happy part, possibly. Well, definitely. We kind of need to look at really where the Whitecaps are right now and what's next for the team. The talk on Wednesday night was Champions League campaign's done. For the next few games, full focus on the league. MLS play. We've got some Voyagers Cup games coming up next month. But the game in Salt Lake was the first of five away games from the next six. And it's a tough spell. We had Salt Lake on Saturday, Seattle this Friday. Mm. Then it's Portland away. Mm. Then you're away to Montreal. Mm. Then you're away in the altitude of Colorado. Then you're away to the heat of Houston. Then you're hosting Sporting Kansas City. Then it's the Voyagers Cup. Yeah. That is a tough stretch of games coming up.
I know. It's difficult. you really put it out there. I think, you know, but the thing is very few midweek games here.
Till the Voyagers Cup.
Yeah, till the Voyagers Cup. They can deal with it.
Yeah, they've got a whole week to kind of mull over the defeat they've had.
The thing is, they got to really just not worry about that right now and just take that next Seattle game. I know.
My God, you're sounding like Robbo.
I know.
Can't look past the first game.
That is how they approach.
I know. We as fans are looking at the schedule.
Also, Robbo isn't like not publicly. Robbo's not just looking game at a time either.
No, I know, he isn't, and he said that in the past too, because he's got an idea of who he wants to play in what game. So he sees what's coming up, and he's gonna do that. But they really need to focus on the Seattle game because that's a big one. That's a huge one. Just not only because it's their rival, but because it's a Western Conference team. They can't take that one. And it's coming up quickly, too. It's not like maybe that much time to turn around.
And defending MLS Cup winners.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly a bigger team in a bigger game than Tigres.
But we're the defending Cascadia Cup champions.
Oh, it's all on the line.
For real.
It's like gold everywhere.
Wait, so let me put like this for you in a language you guys speak. So this is like the WWF champion versus the Intercontinental champion?
I would say, as a kid, but now it would be the WWE champion against the Universal champion.
Whatever.
So it's basically Randy Orton against Brock Lesnar. And you kind of have to feel Seattle as the Brock Lesnar here.
That was my olive branch.
They're going to F5 us.
For your wrestling.
All over the place. On Twitter, Greg Petrie at Our Dumb World, he said Robinson's post-game comments, he was talking about learning something about the players from against RSL. So he's wondering who's going to get benched, who's going to get cut. And if you look at the team that started against RSL, a lot of those guys aren't going to be starting against Seattle. But we do have to look at what is needed to strengthen this team. We've got the allocation money from the Kikuta trade. Bobby was nice enough to tell everyone that they're going after a striker. We've not heard a sniff of who that striker might be. I'm still pushing the Robbie Keane rumours. I still think Robbie's coming.
When's the deadline again?
May. So we have got time.
What's the deadline to use up? Do we have a deadline to use up the relief we get for Edgar being out for the season?
That'd probably be May, I'm assuming.
I thought it was like maybe it's the end of April, beginning of May.
Something like that. It might
be the same date.
How urgent is it, though, to bring in new faces? Like, I mean, is it May Day? How urgent is it to bring in these guys? Do we need to make an addition this week to strengthen the team?
I don't think
do we need to add the striker this week?
Even if they did, I don't know how much would he play. It depends on where he's coming from. If he's coming within MLS, sure. He could definitely make a difference. If he's coming from outside, it depends on what league and where part of the season they're in.
We've got to look at the injuries. We've lost Hurtado. We don't know exactly for how long, but we know it's weeks. We've lost Shea for 6 to 12 weeks. Ooh. Reyna's not back till July. Brett Levis isn't back till July. Edgar's out for the season.
I heard Kikuta has Columbusitis. He's gone for the year. Whitecap Scarf was asking this very question on Twitter. Is, you know, do we believe the Caps need to make a signing ASAP? And if so, in what position? Obviously, position, they publicly, one of them has publicly said that, yeah, they're looking at a striker.
But I would now say, is the left wing position now vital to us? Or do we have enough with Davies, Mosquito, and Teixeira,
there's no way
and
that,
Rosales,
there's
Bolaños?
There's no way they're going to bring in another left winger. One of the interesting things is that, aside from Edgar and Brett Brett. Aside from David and Brett, who were injured last year in the offseason, all the injuries we've had this year are to attacking players. And so it's understandable that they're looking to bring an attacking player. When you only have two choices up front, that's not a good thing. Whether you're playing with one striker or with two and you only have two options.
And one of those choices hasn't played a single MLS minute yet.
Touché. So
although I do think you should have played against RSL, and not just because I'd interviewed him and done a big article on it. I feel Rob will let me down there. I'll speak to him on Tuesday.
Maybe he just did that just to spite you.
Probably. I am quite annoying to him. Asking him about jam and chocolate digestives and stuff.
And gam and tam. Yeah. Do they need to bring in someone? I think they're actively trying to bring someone in. I don't know how quickly is that going to happen. Who knows? Because parameters do change.
But you know, Robert's going to get asked on Tuesday, are you looking to bring a striker in? Are you looking to strengthen the team? And have this on our bingo card. So we're going to do a new 2017 bingo card, I think, this week. And one of the big ones to have on that is Rob will be asked that question. Are you looking at strengthening the team? So it'll be one square. And then a square beside it of him answering, we're always looking to strengthen the team.
Yeah.
And they are. They should be.
Totally.
If they're not, they're not doing their job. It has to be a striker that gets brought in. We definitely need that. The problem we have is we've spent big money on bringing like Breck Shea, injured. Jordy Rayner, injured. We can't spend big money on a guy that might not be a regular starter or make one of those guys not a regular starter when they're healthy.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is we can't wait until these guys are back in the summer because our season, if the next run of games goes horribly wrong, that's a lot to try and make up. And I know Seattle did it last year, but it's not easy to do.
Now, I know what you're saying about the when they come back healthy. I don't think you need to I don't think you have the ability to worry about that right now. You have to, whoever they bring in has to help fix the team right now. When Reyna and Shea and whoever else is injured, it comes back, then you deal with that at that time, whether you ship them out or you kind of spread the minutes around. But at this point, you have to bring in the best player who fits the team and what they need to do in order to fix the attack.
First off, I think we need to put to bed the use of the Seattle last year, Portland the year before had a terrible beginning, and
I know, like saying that.
I
hate it as well.
Okay, good.
I'm just trolling.
What type of striker do you think they're trying to bring in? Because I thought before Kakuta was traded, I thought we had four guys who could play centrally who were so very different.
I feel we need a guy that is somebody that can play a direct nine. A guy that you're not relying on to be creative, but you're just relying on putting the ball away. I know we have Montero for that, but I would like to see him a little bit further back.
So you're talking about like a more experienced or MLS experienced
Kyle? A Robbie Keane kind of guy. I know I'm half joking that's still on the table because I do genuinely think it could still be on the table.
But like, it sounds to me like you want a more experienced Kyle Gregg.
Yes, basically. Okay. I want a guy with an eye for goal, but obviously every single team around the world wants that. We're not going to spend money.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a number of strikers that over in the UK, even in the Championship, that I would look at and think, oh, they would do a great job here.
But that would be costly.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you also got to think that Montero, is he going to come back next year? Like, you also have to look at maybe this guy they bring in now will be a longer-term thing.
That's very true.
And then also for Robbie Keane, if you're bringing him in, he might actually be a decent solution because maybe he doesn't want – he's not concerned with playing starter minutes. And he's happy to come off the bench, start when he needs to and come off the bench for like 30 minutes at a time.
Totally. I think we said this before, but I think the Colombian, the only way he's back next year if it's on another 1 year loan.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that, but that would be my guess.
Yeah. There's no way they're paying any transfer fees or anything like that.
And a fee would be considerable.
It would be considerable. Yeah. I think either they extend his loan for another year because the Chinese club wants to just, you know, avoid the domestic international stuff
and partially cut their losses.
Yeah, and then or they just release him or mutual thing, or they bring him back for a full-time starter.
A name I'm going to put out there, Glass City on Twitter has been going on about this for ages, and I totally agree with him. It would be a good fit here. And we kind of said this after we played Central FC in the Champions League.
Oh, yeah.
Kenwin Jones. Yeah. Mm. He's like the perfect guy. He's out of favour at Atlanta. I'm pretty sure they're going to kind of want to offload him as soon as they can because it was brought in before the current regime was there and it's not the guy that they want. He's played on turf. He's used to our pitch from playing with Central FC. He's a guy that's got goals. He's a big guy. He's a guy that he's not playing every game just now, so it's like it doesn't matter if he's going to be coming off the bench every now and again. He's not going to get too pissed off at not being a regular starter. I think he would be a perfect fit for us if we can get him at the right price. And Atlanta might be wanting to cut a deal just to get rid of him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a weird one, how they brought him. He was he their like very first signing ever before Tata Martino came in? And then doesn't rate him or doesn't care, doesn't think he fits in with their style.
That was essentially a name signing that they wanted to do to get a ticket sales happening.
A guy who used to play in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly.
And we joked with him about, you should come and play here instead. And he was open for it.
Oh, yeah, when the Central game? Yeah, yeah.
So I think that could be definitely a good one. We also have to address the fact, we kind of touched on it earlier, I feel there's a lack of creativity in the midfield.
Well,
you feel there is with Belanius in, and I'm a huge fan of Belanius. He gave a very interesting interview with Harjeet Jahal this week, where, if anyone didn't see it, it's on Red Nation Online. You can follow her on Twitter, at herjournalist, and you can find the link there. But basically, Robbo, out of character for him, because he doesn't usually criticise players that publicly, had said that he was really angry with the shape that Belanius had come into pre-season.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Bola in Wales, and I didn't get the impression from Bola that he wasn't fit. Because he said, I'm good to go, I might be able to play Monday, I'm raring to go, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd said to Robbo when I was chatting to him, Bola said he's probably good to go on Monday. And he's like, did he now? And I was like, that's a bit weird. And then he comes out and says that. And then Bola tells her, I kind of was playing with Costa Rica. Then I wanted a holiday. And I kind of had too much fun with my family. And I didn't come into training in good shape. He is a World Cup veteran. Your most experienced player in the squad. And you're coming in to an important season out of shape. And admitting that you willingly came in out of shape.
Because he was bored. Exercising.
Yeah. I am a huge fan of Belanius. He was my player of the year. What he offers the team, I think no other player in the Whitecaps team can do, but that's unacceptable. You could maybe, if a 19-20-year-old did it, say, that's an experience. Still not acceptable, but it's an experience. They'll get a kick up the ass and they'll learn from that. Teixeira came in a lot fitter this year than he did last year.
But
that's just not acceptable.
I don't disagree that it's not acceptable. And I, too, had some similar experience when I talked to him preseason. He was like, things are fine. I'll be good to go. So what do you do? What do we do about that, Michael? Like, what needs to be done? I was
send a message by benching, but then you're hurting the team.
I was there when that was the Friday press conference before the LA game when Robbo said that to Har. And he only said that to Har. Or he only said that publicly in the press conference because he's already said it to Bola. So, to me, this is like a report on something that's already kind of happened and in the rearview mirror in terms of, I think, the coaching staff and the player, right? So, I don't think there's any value in tarring and feathering him over it now, right? I think we need to move forward. What do you think should... Like,
it's hard. I mean, it's out there. It's just, it's very disappointing. And the fact as well, He had this knee injury before, at pre-season, and no one could get to the bottom of what it was. Like, it was a niggling thing. It's a little bit like Sam Adekugbe's injury. It's something that's just not going away. So he had this, and no one could really find out what it was. And now he's out again with a knee injury, injured against Tigris. If he had come in a little bit fitter and healthier, would he have had these problems? We don't know, it's just speculation. But it's worrying. He's a guy that we need. And with these games that's coming up, I mean, if we look at the games, like Seattle, Portland, Montreal, Columbus, Houston. Let's just look at those ones. Four in the road, one at home, two Cascadian derbies. What would you see as a good return from those games?
From the that's five, right?
Yeah. Four of which are on the road.
Yeah.
Two of them Cascadian derbies.
Well, I think you'd want nine, no less than nine. But that's,
and where are they going to come from, though?
Well, you hope Seattle at home, Portland away, and Montreal away? Yeah, Montreal away.
I think Montreal away is possibly the only game we get points from.
No, I'd say Seattle at home, Montreal on the road, and you get a point somewhere. I think seven would be fine at this point. If you kind of split the games.
Like if we got seven out of those 15, I would be cock-a-hoop.
I think seven is realistic at this point.
Wait, you think that's realistic?
I'm not sorry, realistic, acceptable.
Okay.
Acceptable is the word.
Yeah. I think realistic's one.
I think a draw
in Montreal.
I think pessimistic is one.
I'm mixing those up. I'm hashtag pessimist union.
Is this where we, like, you make some kind of bet with, like, the, if you lose, you get something tattooed somewhere on your body? Is that how this works?
Hey, possibly.
If that was the case, there would be a lot of bets over the past years. Because whenever you looked at a schedule, you've always said, oh, 1 or 2 points maximum.
Prove me wrong, Whitecaps. Prove me wrong.
There was a gentleman from Middle Cascadia, yeah, who before the game, I forget if it was before the game or even after Breck Shea scored, who said he would get Rabo's face tattooed on his face if the Whitecaps overcame Tigris.
that would be interesting.
Which obviously didn't happen.
Two folk looking like Carl Robinson going about. Defensive concerns. Moving forward, would you strengthen anything defensively, or do we keep with what we've got? Do we try and offload Christian Dean? Do we look at bringing in another centre-back since Edgar's out for the season?
If they can, the only thing I would think of is if they can bring in a centre-back with a little bit of experience, well, a lot of experience within MLS. If they have somebody who's maybe in the final year of their contract, that will just play out the year, because obviously you don't have Edgar coming back. So I think that would be the ideal thing to do. And other than that, I don't see anything else happening. It's just somebody for the rest of the year.
I do get the impression that they're wanting to see how Sam DeWitt and Francis DeVries do in the USL as a battle, and then maybe bring one of them in the summer. And I've got to say, Francis DeVries against Seattle for WFC2 on Saturday was excellent.
Yeah,
he played centre back, right?
Yeah, they played three at the back as well. That was much better effect.
Organizational decision.
They actually had four centre backs playing because they had the three centre backs. Sam was in front, playing holding midfield.
It was a great day for formations.
Well, one thing I do want to mention, I know we're not going to be able to talk about WFC2 too much, but you were talking about players that signed, especially defensively. I honestly think Ben McKendry, the performance he put in with WFC2 and the game against San Jose where he looked pretty good, I think he needs to be elevated from, he shouldn't be the number five holding midfielder in the kind of depth chart. I think he should be go up to number three. I think he, or at least number four. I think he's that good at this point. He's better
ahead of Russell.
It must be so Russell frustrating. Well, I mean, I'd get rid of Russell in a heartbeat, but you know that. I think Jacobson is ideal trade bait.
Yeah, I think he should be moved up. I think he's shown enough. He scored a goal on Saturday for WFC2. I think he needs to see more time, either on the bench, off the bench, or starting sometimes.
Salish C86 says that, to be honest, we are so thin right now that it's a very challenging time.
I think we're thin more so at the front. Not so much at the back.
The thing is, Parker's having a good season.
Yeah.
Waston's having an up and down season. And Christian Dean started great, has gone downhill. Harvey's not having a great season. There's definitely concerns defensively. We're shipping a lot of goals.
I didn't say there wasn't concerns defensively. I just think there's we're not crazy thin at the back.
I mean, with injuries. Clean sheet against Philly. And then you let two goals in against LA. You let three goals in against Salt Lake. Could have been way, way more. You let three goals in against San Jose. Tigres banged in goals against us.
Yeah, I think we're talking about two different things. I don't think we're thin on players or options of players.
We're thin on talent.
That's
I think the formation had a lot to do with about the RSL game. I think Tigres, like we said, it was one was a world class strike. One was just because we were pushing guys forward. We want to go to LA. That was like a 2 minute brain f. When
one was an own goal.
When that the French Italian scored like two goals in the
one of those was an own goal.
Yeah. So I think you can remember before that LA game they hadn't allowed a goal while playing with 11 men. Yeah, and that's what something we were hanging our hat on. So I think
that's
okay.
All going out the window now.
I think they're okay.
But we haven't had a player sent off for a while either. And that's something I'll talk about, and then we'll go to some more ads. Matthias Laba.
So close.
Oh, lucky yeah. guy. He got the yellow, and then there was a tackle in the first half on the edge of the box where he just went flying in and missed the guy, thankfully. Yeah. If he'd connected, off. And then I think there was about two other tackles after that which yes. he connected.
The half a dozen of us watching in my living room were just flabbergasted that he was not taken off in that double sub.
Like I knew they were going to take Dean off. It kind of seemed obvious just because he was toiling.
But he needed to come off.
None of those fouls, were they straight red cards potentially?
No.
It would have been a second.
So there's no disco issue here at this point? No. Okay.
Well, you never know. Well, disco. Yeah.
There was a tackle in the first half that didn't get a booking that was horrendous as well, that he just took the guy out and, yeah. Anyway, we'll be back with some more Whitecaps chat after these messages.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking...
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
Saturday, April 15th, a fundraiser for Girls Rock Camp Vancouver is taking place in the Grand Lux Hall of the Western Front, located at 303 East 8th Ave. Tickets are available at Zulu Records, Neptune Records, and both Red Cat Record locations. There will be raffle prizes from Anita Sikma, Nimbus School of Recording, Live Nation, John Fluvog, Tea Leather and Wood, The Juice Truck, Pizzeria Barbarella, CITR, and many more. Doors are at 6, show is at 6:30.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
I like Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Awesome.
I love The Lord of the Rings.
Great.
Yeah. I'm into obscure 1950s atomic monster movies.
Okay. Sure.
I really enjoyed the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles.
We can work with that. Here at the UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society, we accept everyone. We have weekly movies, game nights, and the largest non-academic library at UBC. Come by our club room, 3206D in the Nest. It's a great place to eat lunch, hang out,
and procrastinate.
Check out our Facebook group, UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society, to find out what's going on.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AFT and Soccer Show on CITR Radio.
The knob touching went well this time.
It did. I choked on some pakora because I had finished a bit quicker than I thought. But apart from that, it was a good break.
You got back from the lunchroom quicker.
I did. Yeah. So we're not going to talk too much more because I said this was going to be tighter this week. And before it had gone to 6 minutes past midnight. But we were going to talk about the World Cup bid that's going to be kind of announced tomorrow. The joint bid with America, Canada and Mexico.
With Donald Trump as president.
Yeah.
In a meeting.
Will he still be president in 2026?
There'll be an election, I think.
Will he still be president in 2018?
Very good. But we're not going to talk about that just now. We are planning on doing a special roundtable show next Sunday. We're going to do it live. We're going to go for a full 2 hours.
Which will be interesting.
Yeah.
We've never done a roundtable live.
No, we've only got three mics. We're hoping to have five or six folk in. This is going to be great.
Wait.
We haven't told Zach about this. This is springing this on.
Is there a mute button for for all the things that...
No. We have to be professional. Usually when we do these roundtables, for 2 hours of roundtables, I think we take about 5 hours to record.
Yeah.
Usually it won't be this
time.
So
I say we're going to one, but hey, it's Easter Sunday, Easter Monday the next day. We can just stay up all night. So we're going to talk about the World Cup bid then. And we might bring out a little bit during the week for our premium subscribers, which you can get at aftn.ca. Subscribe to our extra podcast for just $3 a month. Or $30 a year. So, final kind of white caps bit I want to talk about in this episode is attendances. Wednesday night.
Not MLS attendances.
Well, kind of all attendances, really, because we haven't
had a sellout
officially
this year.
Sold a game out. We did get a good crowd for LA, but it wasn't an official sellout.
We've never officially sold anything out. We've artificially sold lots of things out.
Are you Bob Mackin?
Yeah, I heard him on the radio this weekend. He was like, the Whitecaps, whatever they announced, minus 2,000.
Well,
that's what he likes coming to.
The attendance at WFC2 yesterday was 738. So if we take 2,000 off that won't work.
That sounds about right.
That was holograms, yeah.
It was cold.
It was cold. It didn't look like 738 either, I have to say. It kind of felt it was maybe 400 or 500.
It was all worth it for that second goal.
I was texting Zach because I thought he was at home. But it turned out that we were both at the game. But we're just in a crowd of that size, we didn't see each other. But the attendance on Wednesday night against Tigres.
16,258.
And that was up from the game against Red Bulls, which was just 14,183.
Yeah. And those are tickets sold.
Yes. Yeah. And the Crystal Palace friendly got 14,788.
Why are we even talking about that? Yeah, that's not even a real match.
That I don't understand.
Because midweek games.
Okay.
And quality of opposition. That's why I picked then those three as an example.
Still don't know why you're bringing Crystal Palace into it.
Or Dead Bull.
Premier League. And also the way that the Whitecaps crappily deal with their tickets for such games.
Touché.
That's why I've kind of lumped all three of those together.
Well, if we're talking about that, why are we not talking about season tickets?
Well, because we don't want to do a 2-hour show.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't want to start you going on about the front office.
Just for season tickets, there are people who pay half the price. And don't talk to me about, this kind of city, that kind of city. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's triggered.
Right. The attendance against Tigres. I was disappointed. This is likely the best team we're going to have seen at BC place the whole year. Maybe Seattle? No. I think Tigres? Maybe Minnesota United? No. That's the thing. They'll get a bigger crowd from Minnesota United than they got for a Champions League semi-final against Tigres.
But Minnesota United is also on a Wednesday.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Okay, maybe I won't be so cocky with that prediction.
Maybe Marius will sell a lot of tickets.
That's true.
But I was disappointed by the attendance. I certainly wasn't alone. If you speak to the management and the players off camera, they can't believe it was only that attendance as well. And I know it's a competition that doesn't capture some people's imagination. Some people don't understand it. The whole American thing of the league, the playoffs, that's the big thing to a number of folk here. And I accept all that, and I do understand that, which then makes the ticketing decision by the Whitecaps even more baffling. People didn't have the tickets included in their season tickets, and you could argue, should that have been an option for them to get a super-duper cheap deal to get their tickets included? In fact, do you think it should have been that, knowing that these games were coming up, if we qualified, that the supporters could get it in the season ticket package dirt cheap?
Yeah, I think it totally should have been. The really awkward thing when you talk about those packages for this year is after last year, think about last year and the campaign that it was. This season tickets went up in their per game price.
Yeah.
So from like 25 and change to like 28 or almost 28 or just above 28. That's in the white or whatever, the white and teal or the whatever, like the supporter end and the family end or whatever. So they after that last year, the year that it was, they said we're choosing to charge more per game.
Well, they have to pay for Robbo's 4-year contract.
Well, are they paying him that much? I think you should ask him that sometime, maybe.
That might not be one for our bingo card. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. But yeah, maybe it is the reason. But no, but it's
prices
ridiculous.
Up after that season, you'd think they would then offer a sweetener off maybe the Champions League tickets in it free of charge to people. People were having to pay double for their same seats for a tournament that a lot of folk don't even care about.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're never going to come out.
I don't know
that.
About that. But the other awkward thing was, again, they did it with one of these opt-in, opt-out things. And, yeah. I know the guy who does, and I really appreciate the guy who's doing all the hard work behind the scenes for all this stuff. But they did this opt-in, opt-out thing. So people who opted out, didn't want to go see another MLS team in a different competition, could not get the season ticket price for the Tigres match. So I know some people.
That was Mass's brother.
Yeah. He was out of country, so he opted out, came back, wanted to go to the Tigres game, and his ticket was like ridiculously priced, and he's like, I'm not going to pay that.
See, that's
because that was the Ticketmaster price.
It's unacceptable, and you burn bridges with the support, and the way the team's playing, it's been really weird. This year, there's a lot of guys, I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast, I see guys at SFU games, VMSL games, and it's like Whitecaps supporters, guys I've known for years.
I know the two guys you're talking about.
It's more than two, I think it's four. But they've all given up their season tickets.
Right.
And that's a small sample, but if that's what's happening with these kind of hardcore people, what's the average person that's maybe having to travel in from Port Moody and like travel and cost and family and what are they doing?
But see, honestly, the front office doesn't care about that because their perspective is those people are in highly perceived or highly valued seats. We'll be able to sell them if they decide not to renew.
All the tickets that are also going to like secondary markets as well. The prime tickets.
Which supposedly they've cut down on, but it still obviously exists if you talk to people who have, you know, all season long new people next to them.
Do you have major concerns just now about the attendance?
I don't. I think the LA Galaxy one kind of showed that people are willing to come out. I understand where you're coming from, but I think there are concern a little bit with the casual fan. And I'll take that back. There is actually a concern with the supporters. I think the amount of supporters, we talked about it on another podcast, that are not renewing their season tickets and are coming once in a while, that was alarming to me. So I think the casual people that are looking for an event, like the Galaxy, like that actually think that Beckham is still on the team, those people are still going to come out. I don't know about the supporters. They're kind of being eased on out or something like that, it seems like.
So one thing about the Galaxy game, which was 25,000, was because I don't know how what the number is. I would assume it's more than 1,000. I would assume it's less than 2,000 or maybe less than 2,500 of those seats were for their tournament they were hosting. There was youth teams there.
Yeah.
And that's so that brings in a significant number of tickets sold.
Well, then a lot of people do that with the like they kind of work things in and kind of give one and get another out of that. So it kind of works that way with a lot of teams. I'm sure they do that.
So just two questions I want to post to you in this, and then we'll kind of wrap this bit up. But they need to get more people in, and the way to do that is to offer deals. There's the Groupon deals that they can offer. There's corporate deals, but how do you do that when it's going to be public knowledge that you can get these two-for-one deals or cheap deals or half price or whatever without pissing off the fans that's already shelled out full price?
So they do that every year usually. Like you'll see mid to late season, you'll have a bunch of the people who work in the front office will post on their social media saying there's a family raid, there's a workers company raid or whatever, and they'll push those out at maybe – they'll push them out at, let's say, like group rate. And so they'll sell those – usually in the past there's been a lot of the Wednesday matches or whatever. Get a Wednesday match at the group rate. But you're right. Part of what I understand their strategy to be, and I could be wrong on this, is they are always trying to push people towards season tickets. So and one of the crazy things right now is like for just a normal game right now in the supporter end, the ticket is $28 or $28 and change per match for the season. The same ticket at Ticketmaster is $49, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So,
but are folk paying that,
or they're getting them from touts or whatever. But like that is the reality. Like that is the from what I understand. That's I haven't double checked to make sure that there's more charges on top of that for Ticketmaster. But so what they'll say is, well, don't pay $49. Get a season ticket. Get a half season ticket. Get a 5-match pack with us.
The 5-match packs and stuff like that is great, and it's like that is really what they should be pushing more and more and more. And they are trying to do that. They have this city to themselves for the next 2 months.
Yeah, we've been saying this for seven years.
Yeah.
7 years.
But like even looking at WFC2, and I wrote an article about this on Saturday morning or Friday night, like rallying call, you need to come and support this team. And it really worked because we took 1,000 off the average attendance from last year. So
how many people read the article, first of all?
About that many. So yeah. I think they maybe all read it and they were like, you know what? I'm not going. If he's telling me what to do, I'm not doing it. But how do you get people? This is the second thing I was going to ask. How do you get people to turn out for WFC2? The interest isn't there. And I don't want to open the whole thing of like, if folk won't go and watch USL, will they go and watch Canadian PL? That's something we'll talk about in a round table.
They will, because there's going to be all those people who've left and are frustrated.
Well,
all four. Yeah.
Now
four plus.
The one thing about this game itself, the Langley game, you got to. I don't know how much. I know, but how much of an effect did they have that they know that the Whitecaps are playing at 6:30? Are they going to be able to get back to where they are?
I don't even know if Fulton knew the Whitecaps 2 were playing, because I think the promotion of it had been terrible.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. But no, how?
But that was connected to they were just trying to push Tigres so much.
Yeah.
It's like the coaching staff. What are you focused? Are you worried about Seattle coming? No, I'm worried about the next match. Yeah. You know, I mean, like
to get the promotion, you can't just rely on the Whitecaps to promote it either, because they can only do so much. At the game, you had like Perry and stuff doing the commentary, and then you had the Whitecaps communication team doing their Twitter match reports, everything like that. I was the only media person there, nobody else. After the game, I just wandered on the pitch, just grabbed a few folk. So watch for those interviews coming up on AFTM as a shameless plug next week, where I spoke to Dominic Zater, the Domi Zater, and Gloria Amanda.
Yeah, he put out your picture out already.
Yeah.
He was solid too in that game.
But that it's like the media don't care to come and watch. The fans don't care to come and watch. Do we just accept it? It's just like, okay, no one's going to watch. It's not about that. It's about developing the players. Who cares who turns out? Or is it just a growing concern that just all across the club, people are becoming more and more disillusioned with it?
Well, I think there's people concerned. They should be.
Yeah.
If they're not, they should
I hope they are.
Long term, I think I think there's lots of things you could do to build the club, and we could talk for hours about that. I think short term, the thing that cures and gets people in a building is winning.
Yeah.
And
but you say that, and then WFC two.
No,
had
sorry,
a
at the top level.
Successful season last year. And folks still couldn't.
Yeah, at the top level.
Yeah.
For the first team, for the second team, I think the way that they've gone about that with not getting into New West, stuck at UBC, out in Langley to connect with a different crowd.
Which is also, I mean, I know I make jokes about it being in the interior and stuff, but I actually get there quicker than I do to UBC.
Can I pose a question to you guys? And no, with your guys' knowledge of European football, are the top teams in, or any teams in European football, concerned about what their second team does in attendance? Is it an issue with them?
No, that's a good point.
Are they happy with like the 25, 26 people that show up usually for those games?
That's just these five.
No, yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point, Steve. They aren't. But the problem with the way our football club operates is it's at the bottom line is the only line. And well, so the finances that are being put into WFC2 and what it's losing is a problem, which is, from my outside opinion, is why they looked at moving it, or why they're looking at moving it, or why they want
to
shut it.
Yeah, especially if they want to bring a women's team in, which you can argue is also going to lose money as well. No,
the thing is, like you said, there is a concern of where those cuts are going to come from if they're losing money at WFC too, because there will be cuts other places in the organization, and that's a guarantee in order to keep the bottom line red or black. Sorry.
And I think that's something we can maybe talk about another day. So we're going to come to the end of the podcast pretty soon. It's time now for our wavelength section, though, just before we go. And obviously, last week, Zach was a huge fan of I Ludacris.
Oh, yeah.
I've got some more songs from them lined up, but they're more upbeat, and they're not tonight, so don't worry.
Okay, you brought in a different dirge for tonight?
Well, you thought that last week's one was a little bit slow. So I'm going back to punk.
Okay.
We're going back to 1993.
It's because you hung with Michael W. today, right?
Possibly. We're going back to 1993. London punk band The Business from their album Hardcore Hooligan. Actually, 2003, sorry, not 1993. 2003. So we've actually gone past a millennium. Hardcore Hooligan. This is a song all about how it ties in well with what we've just talked about. Money coming into football, taking the whole soul out of football, the fans getting their soul stripped. This is The Business, and Terrace Lost Its Soul.
Life makes everything to be.
Whoa, The Terrace Lost Its Soul by The Business there from their 2003 album, Hardcore Hooligan.
I can roll with that.
That is an excellent album. I really recommend it. 12 songs, lots of punk. The song I was going to play tonight had a lot of swearing in it, so we'd have to mark the whole show explicit. 4 C words, about 12 F words, a couple of others thrown in there as well. But it's a really good song about Gareth Southgate missing a penalty. So obviously I like that.
I remember that. Hey.
So I thought you'd like that. We'll maybe play that one week. But yeah, so that was fun. I enjoyed that. It's got me buzzing, which is just what I want at 12:30 at night when I'm working tomorrow. I need to get to sleep.
Hopefully none of the listeners have their ears bleeding.
Just to be clear, though, because Gareth has, I think, missed more than one penalty. You're talking about the Euro 96 one.
It was Euro 96, Because the song is Southgate brackets Euro 96.
Okay.
Anyway, just before we go, I just want to say a few things about TSS FC Rovers. As some of you will know, AFTN is the official media partner for TSS Rovers for their inaugural PDL season. They had their brilliant launch night on Friday night. Steve, you couldn't make it.
Yeah, but it looked fantastic on the pictures and everything. It looked like a good time, and the kits are really nice.
The kits are excellent. I mean, that's how you bring out a kit: simple colors. No triangles.
Oh, really? Colors? Colors are a good thing to make.
I did enjoy
it. Rather than white, we had triangles.
I did enjoy their Twitter thing where they were like making fun of the, like, this is red because it's red.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
I liked the whole unveiling of the thing as well. It's just they had two players up there.
Take off their jacket?
Yeah, take your jackets off.
Turn around. Yeah, it was good.
And we've got a video up on YouTube, so you can check that out. And every day this month until TSS kick off their PDL season on May 5th, we're going to have at least one article on TSS up on AFTN. Every day, check it out at 6 p.m. We're going to profile the players. They were all announced, kind of all announced on Friday night. All the registrations aren't through yet, so some of them were not allowed to officially profile, but they are all signed.
I noticed one name missing that I heard was a possibility, but maybe I'll ask you about that later.
Yeah, maybe not on air.
but it's great. For me, the most exciting thing is here's an opportunity for some of our residency kids.
Yeah, the six residency alumni at the moment, there could possibly be another one on top of that as well.
So let's see, Vigeli, probably mispronouncing that. I don't want to call him by his nickname. Tim Hickson, I know he wasn't there yet, but he'll be here. So excited to see him play again. And Eric DeGraff, just amongst others. But
yeah, Patrick Isaac,
yeah.
Andre Bears.
It's going to be good times.
Marcello Palizzi.
Yes.
And his brother
yes.
Matteo as well. So right. We've got a pair of brothers to cheer on again. It's going to be a great season. Kicks off with two games against Calgary Foothills out in the wild, wild west of Calgary.
You're going, right?
No, I'm not. I think it clashes with one of our games. It's got something to do with the Provincial Cup or something that I'm not going. Right. But the Friday the 5th of May is when they kick off. Sunday the 7th is the second game. The big game that everyone wants to get to, though, home opener, Swangard Stadium. Friday, May 12th, against Lane United. It's going to be a tailgate in Swangard. Lots of supporters groups are getting out. The Swan Guardians, Curva, Southsiders, I believe, are going to be there as well.
I don't think.
Cedric, our good friend Cedric. Cedric will be there with his one man.
I don't think any of those movements are going to be there, but people from those movements will probably be there.
Oh, wow. The politics of fan culture.
No, it's not politics. It's just...
But anyway, shameless plug, get your season tickets. $70 for the season. That gives you 8 games, the 7 league games, and a special marquee game. We're calling it a special marquee game because we don't actually have the opponent set yet. But it could be against Curva Collective. I think Zach's put his hand up. I'd watch that. Maybe Crystal Palace will come.
Oh, yeah. Well, Alan Pardew's gone, though, so.
Maybe not then.
He won't be able to enjoy
Vancouver. Oh, no, is it? It's Big Sam, right?
Whoever.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, bring him over.
Yeah, let's bring them back.
Maybe the Chinese can fund it.
But anyway, check everything out, tssrovers.com. Follow them on Twitter at tssrovers.
And by Chinese, I meant the Chinese cultural community group that brought over Crystal Palace last time, just for clarification.
Nice save.
Yes, well, we'll cut that out altogether when we do the podcast. Anyway, that is it for this week's episode of the show. I'm Michael McCall. You can find me on Twitter at AFTN Canada.
I'm Steve Pander, and you can find me at Whitecaps Beat.
My name is Zachary Adam Eisenheimer. You can find me at Zachary AM on Twitter, and I'm a part of the movement, Curva Collective.
And remember to read all our stuff, aftn.ca, away from the numbers. I'm also the Whitecaps beat reporter for MLSsoccer.com and the Western Conference reporter for USLsoccer.com. But anyway, that is it for this episode of the podcast. Number 185 is in the books. Thanks for listening. We only went to 12:30 tonight. I think that's we've saved half an hour there. I had a very tight schedule for this. I don't know what happened. But anyway, we've gone over half an hour. But thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
on the Caps.
Going to your first match is an experience you never forget. The atmosphere of what's going on around the pitch looks beautiful, and you always look and go, wow, I'd love to play here one day. If you get the bug, it's going to stay with you for life.
Magazine from CITR has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smokey every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Discorder magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theatre, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Three women, dressed in lingerie, were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist.